All right, good afternoon, everyone. Around the Brian Mike, it's a Thursday afternoon. Just finished an amazing vacation Bible school. And Steve Wilson's at a law seminar. Of course, Bill now is at Sandy Ridge Baptist Church up in Hickory, North Carolina. I don't know when he's going to get on sermon audio, so don't ask any more emails about that. That'll be his decision. And then pray for David McManus. His little boy's having a little complications, and they're doing surgery right now. And we pray that baby Marcos will be just fine. This is a letter from AFA. What's AFA stand for? American
Family Association.
Yeah, American Family Association. And this is coming from the president of the association. And it starts off, Dear Stephen, and the date is June 21st. And I thought it was an interesting letter. It's going to give us lots to talk about. So let's get started.
Dear Stephen, I just wanted to report back to you about the meeting in New York today between GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump and Christian leaders from across the country. Franklin Graham prayed to open the event. Dr. Ben Carson spoke and told us about the Donald Trump he had come to appreciate. Governor Mike Huckabee served as moderator and sat across from Mr. Trump. Trump entertained questions from the likes of Dr. David Jeremiah, Dr. James Dobson, Tony Perkins, Kelly Shackelford, and Sammy Rodriguez.
All right, so I know a couple of those people. Does anybody know who Kelly Shackelford is or Sammy Rodriguez and what they do or anything?
I do not know about Shackelford and Rodriguez.
Okay, I guess it's not that important.
The questions were about religious freedom, Israel, potential Supreme Court nominees, and abortion. I thought his strongest answers were about the type of judges he would appoint. I believe he fully understands the importance of this issue and said all his judges would be vetted by the Federalist Society, a stalwart conservative organization. To me, this may be the most important issue of this campaign from the perspective of AFA and our supporters. After all, the next president will likely appoint two or more Supreme Court justices in the next 4 years. As we have seen over the last few years, it doesn't matter how many good laws are passed if the courts are going to strike them down. Trump's weakness is that he did not clearly state his views in answer to the questions asked by Perkins and Shackelford about when the religious freedom and the LGBT movement come into conflict, other than to say that these matters will be decided by the courts.
All right, so let's stop right there. Joey, is he right that the most important issue is the judge's issue?
Yeah, probably from the presidential election standpoint, it seems to be very important because they are overturning laws. Judges are legislating now rather than just making rulings on.
What does that mean when we say legislating from the bench? I don't think that people understand that.
Yeah, I mean they are seeing a law, and if they decide that they don't like the law, they change the law, basically. So if they decide that it's wrong to, in North Carolina, for transgender people not to be allowed to go to the bathroom of their choice, they decide that the law is wrong and just overturn it without any clear precedent for doing so or any constitutional precedent for doing so.
So up to this point, we have expected that the only time that they do that is when a law is enacted that is in clear violation of the Constitution of the United States. But it doesn't seem as though we would say that our Constitution speaks to the issue of what bathroom transgender people get to use.
No, it does not.
Yet there's
who can marry who, for that matter.
Right.
Because that was the
I mean,
big
it, yeah. it's really difficult to imagine that our founding fathers, John, could ever envision a day in which our nation would be passing laws about bathrooms and transgender.
And I think the listener needs to understand that what we're essentially talking about is a difference in philosophy of the way that the Constitution at a basic level is viewed. And one philosophy would say that the Constitution was written in a context and needs to stay in that context. And the context in which it was written is the guiding principle for the way our nation should be conserved and stay. And the other, the more liberal view, is that it's a living document that the culture can shape. And even even it's okay to say something's constitutional if the culture changes and you can kind of twist the culture into some sort of application to an original idea.
And Joey, there's a theological parallel here, and what is it?
Yeah, because theological liberals will say the same thing about the Bible. It's a living document. You interpret it how you see fit. If you feel that it pertains to you, then that's fine. Do that, but don't force that on anyone else.
Yeah, this is that group that believes that the Bible contains truth but is not truth.
Sure.
And you know, and this person can say, I believe this book's true. Yeah. And it sounds very evangelical when they say those words. They don't come out and say that it is a mixture of truth and error. That's not how, it's not forward like that. That's, people don't understand that it's sly, it's crafty, it's under the table. Because the founding fathers could never envision a day in which people were able to have transgender surgeries, that means that the Constitution can't speak to the issue.
Yeah, and I guess my retort would be to a liberal, especially. Well, then fine, let's go through the process and make an amendment. You think that protection needs to be there? Then let's go through the process of making an amendment, which is much, much harder to do. But 65% of the people have to agree to it and pass the law. It has to get approved in the Senate. It's a long process. That's why they don't have very many. We don't get amendments very often.
And I think we have to really be careful because it is a parallel. But the one difference is the one was written by God, mm-hmm. and the other one was written by man. And we don't want to elevate the Constitution to the level, but the one of the underlying principles that is really at play here is if there is a law and we don't like it, what do? Well, our society is moving more and more towards, well, if you don't like it, find a way around it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, one of the signs of a decay in the fabric of a society. One of the things that made the Roman Empire great was the rule of law protected the citizens. And we could see that, you know, that's exactly what we've got. A lot of our ideas are based on the fact that this is the rule of law and it speaks. That's what you talked a minute ago about precedents. You know, why in the court of law do we argue precedents? Because we are concerned what people who came before us thought about the original document.
Right, and we believe that the Constitution empowers states to have differences so that states are not, although united, are not identical, such that North Carolina can choose to be more conservative in issues based on the people. And what we have here is a scenario where four or five judges are deciding, we don't care what all the people in North Carolina decided. See, to me, it's not a biblical issue, it's not a theological issue, it's the fact that the Constitution, John, permits us to be different as states so that I then can move to whatever state I philosophically most want to align with.
And I think we would not be wrong to say that there's been a legitimate migration toward many southern states, in part because they're better on taxes, better business. And Pat McCrory has done a great job in the last month of just reminding people and over again the tremendous growth that North Carolina has had with many of the tax breaks that they put in place for some of these businesses.
Texas would be another example of that.
Oprah Winfrey said the other day she was filming a movie in Georgia, and they asked her why she picked Georgia. She said, we love those tax breaks. So they're guided by that idea that she's a liberal, diehard liberal. She wants more money in her pocket. So when it's convenient for a state to make the laws that benefit them, then they're okay with it. But when the law doesn't benefit them anymore, now all of a sudden it's not okay.
Yeah, there is quite the dichotomy there between the idea of I think the government should provide as many resources as possible, many services as possible, put the government in charge, but yet I will make my movies in Georgia because I pay less taxes when I make my movies in Georgia.
Yeah.
Well, if you want the government in charge of everything, pay more taxes. Just send them checks. Just mail them extra checks.
All of a sudden, taking care of the poor, apparently, through the federal government and the state government is not such a big needy thing.
Right,
anymore.
And then they want to scream about when you want to open up my cell phone, get my information from Apple, you want to scream about your privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it flies in the face.
That's conservatives and liberals that are upset about that.
I know, but I'm saying the more you want government in charge, the less privacy you're going to have.
Yeah, that's true.
That's very true. So Trump's viewness was that he did not clearly state his views and answer the questions by Perkins and Shackelford. Did we find out who any of these were?
Yes, Kelly Shackelford is, it is a male, despite the confusion of his name, but he's the CEO of the First Liberty Institute. It's the largest legal firm for religious freedoms.
Okay.
And then Sammy Rodriguez is a Puerto Rican-born evangelical pastor, but he is Latin. So, kind of a
covering all their minority. Bases.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought he played shortstop for the Dodgers, but I guess
maybe that
Dave
was him.
If Dave was here, he would have been. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. His religious freedom and LGBT movement come in conflict, other than to say that these matters will be decided by the courts.
He repeatedly said he was for religious freedom, and his fallback position was that he would appoint judges who would defend religious freedom. Mr. Trump also said that he was tired of the political correctness surrounding matters of our Christian heritage, and used Christmas as an example. He said companies want to profit of Christmas, but they don't want to use the word Christmas. He says Merry Christmas and thinks the politically correct crowd just wants to change the greeting and something more generic. It's another attempt to diminish the role of Christianity in America. This made me wonder if he's been reading the AFA Journal. Trump answered Dr. Jeremiah's question about Israel, saying he would be a strong supporter of the nation of Israel and never understood Jewish Americans who vote for Democrats who don't support Israel.
Well, there are a couple of reasons for that, I think, because that puts all Jews into one theological camp. There are conservative Jews and there are liberal Jews, and then there are Jews in the middle. There are lots of Jews, many of them that don't believe that it's the state's responsibility to reclaim the land, to reclaim Israel. It's the job of the Messiah when he comes. So many of them aren't even thinking in regards to that. Anyway, secular Jews are basically atheists that uphold the religious laws of Judaism for the sake of having some moral basis for their family, but they're not concerned at all for the religious beliefs or protecting the nation as itself. They're more trying to be inclusive.
And what category would Netanyahu fall into?
He would fall into that middle ground that says conservative Jews, where we want the land is ours and we want to keep it and we're gonna fight for it.
I know he's a big
he's a Zionist Trump supporter. But there's a lot of Orthodox Jews. He's conservative, Orthodox, conservative, liberal, and then the Orthodox don't believe many times that the land is theirs until the Messiah gives it to them.
So like a fundamental Jew.
Yeah, like a fundamental Jew would say that's the Messiah's job, not ours.
Really, I think Zionism came about in the late 1940s.
Yeah, and there was a lot of debate during that time period of whether they should be fighting for the land. I think some of these silly things that Trump sometimes, I don't want to call them silly because that makes them sound like they're not important, but the idea that he's bringing up the idea of a war on Christmas. I think he just is, many times he's just trying to tickle people's ears. You know what I mean? I'm not really all that concerned about whether Target keeps Christmas on their coffee cups or whatever. You know what I mean? I'm more concerned about what happens when a pastor gets up and preaches and he says that homosexuality is wrong. Is he going to be protected or not? And if you're a conservative, those should be the things that you are listening for. And the fact that he's not clear on that issue should be a major red flag.
Okay, well, how do we have, and we're going to finish the article in a minute, but I read it beforehand, how do we have an entire letter that deals with the time that they were together and Social Security is not addressed? So we're talking about Merry Christmas, and what's going to happen to Social Security is just not addressed, or how are we going to reduce the debt, or what about immigration and love your neighbor as yourself? Those are some, to me, very difficult issues that are just, I mean, they're not even here. Again, the LGBT issue is not an issue that the president's going to decide. The court's going to decide that. The court is going to decide that. And the president has no impact on Merry Christmas. I mean, I agree with you, Joey. I don't really care whether Target folks say Merry Christmas or not.
I'm going to shop there anyways because it's cleaner.
It's not a big deal to me whether I go out to Walmart and I hear everyone saying Merry Christmas or not.
And now you're exactly right with regard to Social Security, because I read today that one of them, Medicare, Medicaid, they're saying it's going to go bankrupt faster than we thought.
Right.
So now the next year, guess what? Everybody's rates are going to go way up because they've got to try to fund this thing. And this is a guy who has not shown any ability to deal with legitimate issues that are still on that.
I can't figure out how these guys get him together in the same room and it's not addressed. Because it is the pressing issue. People are living longer than ever. More surgeries are being done to people old. You're 70 years old, 75, 80, 85 years old. I'm going to replace your knee. And we're going to charge the federal government $30, $40, $50, $60, $100,000 to replace your knee so that you can sit in your lazy boy for another year before you pass away. And nobody wants to talk about those issues, John. Nobody wants to talk about the fact that we're going to have to figure out when does it stop. I don't know that sounds harsh. I mean, your dad's still alive today and still young enough to be functioning fairly well, but you're right around the corner from this. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law is 85 years old, had two knee surgeries. The third one is not a possibility. Second one botched to pieces. We're dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars that are being billed to Medicare, Medicaid, the federal government, and we're all paying for it, and we're not even talking about it.
Yeah, we really have lost, because of some of the things that have happened with ISIS and with this LGBT, we've lost. 2 years ago, these were major, major issues that were on the table.
And they're completely gone.
Yeah, and that's why Rand Paul was able to surge to the front, and then when it came to this election year, he's pushed all the way on the back burner again because of ISIS. So that's a great point. And people have to start, but I think people don't want to think about their grandma or grandpa, or their mom and dad not getting
Not
getting the help.
I think that's also why they're not talking about it, because everything Trump does at this point is trying to gain a voting crowd. And if we're going to talk about a hard issue where this could affect your family members that are at home, at this conference, then you may not support me. But
like an organization like AFA. I mean, who do we think the bulk of their listening audience is? People 50, 60, 70 years old? Yeah. You know, so this is not, they're trying to assure those 7-year-olds that you can vote for Trump. Mm-hmm. That's what the purpose of this letter is. And so they're not going to tackle the tech issues. All right, after the Christmas issue, what's the next one? Dr. Jeremiah's question about Israel, right?
About Israel.
All right, and then what's the next one?
Trump understands, talks about Islam, understands the threat to our country by Islamic jihadists. He has taken a lot of heat from the liberal media for criticizing the problems with Islam. On a personal note, I met several people who have known Donald Trump personally for several years and said he is not the brash, arrogant, sometimes rude person he appears to be on television. I will say without the media cameras in his face, he was pleasant, relaxed, funny, and more thoughtful. I think it was admirable and honorable for Trump to meet with Christian leaders. He is not our enemy. I believe he has instincts that are reverent and patriotic. He's 69 years old and remembers an America that was once a great country but has lost her way.
There's lots of things that I'm struggling with here.
Yes.
Number one, if you can act like a nice, polite, sensible person, but off the camera, then you ought to be able to do it on the camera. and just to take some biblical application of pastoral qualities, if you're not blameless, then you shouldn't be in a role of leadership. And so that certainly goes against him. And then this last statement that is, I believe, is his instincts are relevant, irreverent, and patriotic.
But put them together, right? I mean, the Bible and apple pie. Come on, Joey, don't think about. Please don't separate those two. I mean, they're together.
It's almost as if Donald Trump wants to have a stage name. That he has a separate persona for his political platform. But if you know the guy privately, then he's a completely.
You know, he's
guy.
Still pretending like he's on whatever that show that he did on NBC on Sunday nights, The Apprentice, or whatever. He's still acting like that's what That's where he's at. And again, I understand that America was a great country. I understand that there were great generations that lived before my generation. And yet at the same time, there are lots of things that have not been great about that past. And we seem to forget about that every time we say that. A great country that's lost her way. We've kind of always been struggling to be on the right path as a nation from our very inception. So I think that those are just... They're trying to conjure up these feelings of the past and make everybody feel warm and fuzzy.
But it wasn't
always like that.
Jonathan, when do you think that they most think that, that America was a great country? What decade do you think that they're playing to with that description?
Boy, I don't know. I was just sitting here thinking about when we drove the indigenous people of this country off their land.
Right.
And that was, you know, when we were declaring our independence and soon after, and we were taking over their land and...
And then after that, we were importing slaves in.
Yeah, and then after that, you know, we were still reeling with the Jim Crow laws and slavery. So, I mean, Joe, you're absolutely right. There's always been an issue in our country with the way we've treated our fellow man, and we've never got it right.
Yeah, for most people in our country, ethnicity especially, they can look back to a generation of America, and they go, "Wow, you remember that as the good old days." But for us, it wasn't the good old days. We lived and we were happy and we enjoyed life, and yet we dealt with a lot of persecution and suffering.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things they're really saying is we didn't have to deal with this perversion that we see, the LGBT movement. We didn't have to deal with this issue of abortion. We didn't have to deal with these things that a lot of people maybe engaged in on a smaller number, but in unpolite society, no, the mainstream didn't talk about it. But now that it's out in the front and out in the open, you know, this really disturbs us. Well, you know, the issue is sin should have disturbed us from the beginning, but because it wasn't mainstream, we really weren't paying attention.
Yeah. I think that's a point well taken. This is being elevated as kind of the sins above all sins, I guess, to the mm-hmm. point where we're forgetting that these other terrible things, like internment of Japanese Americans, were bad.
Right, and there's another example. Yeah. And you know, and you go through the eugenics programs that we have, where we're sterilizing people
in Puerto Rico.
You know, and just all over the map on the way we were, you know, doing things.
When did we intern? I think that's the correct word. Chinese.
I know we did Japanese during
Japanese.
We did that during World War II.
Right
after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Rounded up many of them and
put them in camps.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for maybe what some people would say was a legitimate reason. We didn't know who was a traitor and who wasn't, because they did find traitors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's some of the precedent that a guy like Trump would probably run to now and say, "We did this once. Why can't we do it again to try to protect ourselves?"
But the point of the matter is, we've never been a Christian nation.
Yeah. We've done lots of good things, lots of great things.
Right, and even some of the, you know, what we would put in quotes, some of the early colonies that, you know, definitely had a, you know, worship God, and they did stuff to each other that, you know, we would...
Yeah, you couldn't be a Baptist in Virginia legally until after the war for independence was over.
Right. But he also comes from a very secular world, and that way of thinking is part of who he is. That's a pretty good sentence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality. It doesn't mean I can't vote for him or not vote for him. I respect both of those choices, or abstain. I respect that third option. Because people are struggling. There seems to be a perspective that the president of the United States must be a born-again Christian.
Yeah. And there also is this idea that the president of the United States is supposed to be our Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I heard it again yesterday on the evening news. Hillary Clinton, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make this the greatest middle class ever. And here's what Donald Trump, I'm going to make America great again, as if those two people hold all the power to actually do that. And they don't have to worry about that the 100 people in the Senate and the 456 or 480 in the Congress, or all those judges all over the country that have been appointed by Bush and Reagan and Clinton.
Or, Joey, because I think you're making a great point, or that my God is so powerful that in spite of what's going on there, he can still bless me.
Mm-hmm. I can still enjoy life and be happy and be fruitful.
Yes, right. That even in an economic downturn, or when so-and-so's in office or not in office, that the conditions of God's promise of blessing, and those kind of things based on giving and obedience are not dependent upon who's in office.
Yeah, I mean, if we go back to Exodus, God was blessing the people of Israel under extreme persecution.
God was blessing the midwives of the Egyptians for the way they were dealing with God's people. So God's ability to bless his people and care for his people and provide for their needs has never been dependent upon who is elected in office.
But that's a really good point, because what was perceived to be the blessing back then was children. And, you know, and Pharaoh looked around and said, man, this people has become a great nation. Why? They have all the money? No, they have all the kids. They have all the... But in America, the reverse is now the case, and we want all this stuff, and that is now, and that's now our measurement of greatness, is all this stuff, and they're playing on that idea,
right?
And they're also playing on the idea that, you know, they're not calling you to make the sacrifice; they're calling someone else to make the sacrifice,
right?
So that you get what you deserve,
right? So when I'm looking at a Vacation Bible School, 5th and 6th graders, and we're coming out of the flood, and we're going into now, you be fruitful and multiply. The commandment given, right? I mean, that's the first words out of God's mouth, essentially, to this new generation that's going to start all over. And I'm looking at 5th and 6th graders and saying, God's plan for you, little boy, is to find a wife and get married and have children. How many would you like to have? And their parent is going, yes, you can do that after you get this, 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 and this. But God didn't say that. It's not what God's... It wasn't get your master's degree, get your first home, and then you can start that. That wasn't what God said. God said, you be fruitful and multiply. We have added layers, John. Layers.
And I think that's one of the parts of his the worldly view, because what a lot of people are going to do, they're going to look at Trump and go, man, I want what that guy has. I want a tower named after me. I want jets. I want money. I want, you know, all this stuff. And they're going to vote thinking, Joey, like you called him, the savior. This is the guy that, and you know what, he's playing on that. He's like, you know what, it's not really so much the policy.
Well, Obama was the Messiah. Yeah. Obama was the Messiah. He was going to make everything right. Now, let's just be obnoxious for a minute on the podcast. African Americans, your life is not better. It's been 7 years, and your life is not better. There is not one single measurable, quantifiable... I'm not talking about Christian stuff, John. I'm talking about strictly pragmatic stuff. There's been... black fathers are not more engaged. The wealth of the black community has not increased. There is not a higher number graduating from high school. There are not more employed. There are not less children born into unwed situations. In any practical, pragmatic way of quantifying what we would say would be success, any of them, any of the benchmarks, Brian, none of them, not one single one has improved in 7 years of having the first African-American president who promised to be the Messiah. And I think everyone listening would say racial tensions are not less, they're worse. Yeah,
and they want to, and he would quickly point to all the Republicans or whatever, but you could go to a state like his home state of Illinois and you could see it's not better there. It's not better in Maryland. It was so bad in Maryland where it's been hard for a Republican governor to be elected in the last 35 years. They have a Republican governor for the first time in a long time. That's how bad things have gotten in Maryland, which is a very liberal state.
Well, Chicago is the murder capital of either the United States and sometimes the world. And there is more black-on-black violence happening in Chicago, and they have everything that you're looking for: a Democratic mayor, a Democratic city council, a Democratic legislative branch, Democratic Senate, Democratic governor, all the Democrats you want. I mean, the current mayor was the president's former chief of staff.
Not Rahm Emanuel.
Right, exactly. So everything that you want is there, and you haven't been able to fix it.
Yeah, and it just goes to underscore that there is... The president of the United States, whether you want to bring back Reagan or Trump or whoever, they're not going to be a savior of the nation.
No. Stop thinking of him as your Messiah. Focus on the true Messiah and recognize that God does have the power to bless you in spite of economic downturn. That even in the worst of the Depression, there were people that were doing well. And I know I'm only measuring it in one sense, but I know that people vote with their wallets. They vote with their wallet. And do we not believe that God is able to see his people doing well? I mean, our Vacation Bible School. God found, Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord, and the very next thing that we read about is his obedience. Mm-hmm. That's what we read about, his obedience.
Right.
I mean, it's directly tied to Noah's obedience in a wicked world. And we get this impression that God is not powerful enough to see through the wickedness and find his people and reward them for their faithfulness. And we've got to believe that he can do that. All right, anything else in our letter that is worthy of our attention? We're about at the last paragraph, right? He says, on a personal note, why don't you start there, Brian? I met several people who... Oh, that's the brash arrogant. We already read that. Where's the part about... it's all... Sorry, listener. Yeah. It's all jammed together in a single
ways,
line.
In some ways, he strikes me as an enigma.
Right.
Yep. A man still searching for spiritual answers in his life. But that's just my opinion. I will say this. He is listening to some great men of God that I have a lot of respect for, and that's a good thing. To conclude, who but the Lord knows what lies ahead for Donald Trump? He wasn't my first choice for president, but the majority of GOP voters chose him. Now, either he or Hillary Clinton will be the next president of the United States. So, if one of them shows genuine interest in understanding Christians better and says he will be our friend, I believe we should tell him what we think and where we stand. To use a sports word, I think he's coachable. And I'm glad I came to New York. It was worth it. And I would ask you to pray for Mr. Trump and our country.
All right. So it sounds to me like Tim is sold. What do you think, Joe? You think he's sold?
I think he's going to vote for him over Hillary.
Yeah. Right. Right. And that's where I'm at. Yeah. If you give me two choices, he wins every time.
I'd be interested to know what the author means by the word coachable. Because when I think of coachable, I think of there's someone who is more skilled training you at whatever it is.
I think
who's going to be training Donald, the president of the United States?
I don't think that they're.
I don't think
you're
that's
gonna
a
say,
wise use.
Pick an adjective for Donald Trump. Coachable would never, never. All the only reason those guys are there is because Trump knows that if he doesn't get their vote, he loses.
Yeah.
He's not coachable. He's just trying to pacify them
and
give.
Which is why you talk about Christmas
in June.
That's why
I think the same comment about, well, I know him personally. He's not this brash guy you see on TV. I think that's just trying to spin the thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit of maybe trying to soothe the conscience, too.
Well, because, I mean, they want to win the election. I mean, AFMA and GOP are in the same bed together, so, you know, they want to win the election. And, you know, I guess I don't want to lose the election either, whatever that looks like, but I guess I don't have to worry about losing the election because God's in charge.
Right.
And we're going to get who God decides we're going to get for our good or for his will or for his glory. I guess you can't come out and say the man's lost, but he almost did. Certainly.
Well, never to having to ask God for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It'd be hard to characterize, as you said many times, that a person could say that and be a Christian.
Yeah, and I would never think of Donald Trump as teachable, which to me is what he means by coachable, teachable.
Yeah.
And I've been wrestling with who in the world's going to be his vice president. And I just can't imagine who would want to be his vice. The way he just talks to people and treats people, I just can't fathom who would want to be on his team.
Well, apparently Ben Carson appreciates him now, and Mike Huckabee's the moderator at a...
But him and Ben were always buddy-buddy. Like, they never really went after... He never really went after... and he really didn't go after Ted Cruz until Ted Cruz became a legitimate threat to him.
That's correct.
And because him and Ted were buddy-buddy, so...
You think Trump would have a better opportunity at grabbing the Republican vote with Carson over Cruz?
I think if Trump wants to try to get any sort of vote with his presidential candidate, he needs to go to Condoleezza Rice and say, I really want you involved in this process. Will you be my vice president? Because I think that's the only vice president that has a legitimate chance of trying to save this election.
And someone that he hasn't burned a bridge already with.
Yeah, yeah. Because I just can't see how you're considering Newt Gingrich... You know, like, they're consensus. Like, Newt Gingrich is on the short list. Seriously? Do you want to lose?
Well, that's the staunch GOP
sure,
establishment.
But that's stupid. That's
they tried that song.
That's
and dance
idiotic.
He doesn't get any votes with him.
No, he's ugly. He's mean.
The ones that are gonna vote are gonna vote for him, regardless of who his VP
sure.
is.
And if I dated Newt Gingrich, I would say, or if I debated him, I would say, you remember Newt when you divorced your wife when she was having when she was in the middle of cancer?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Because he's not a good guy.
No,
sorry, I said dated Brian.
Yeah, there's nothing. I think your point is well taken. I can't imagine Condoleezza Rice saying
no, I guess
yes.
That she would either. It'd be a miracle.
Right. But I think that you're right. I mean, you capture so many things. First of all, let's state the obvious. You capture brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, the woman is incredible. She's a concert pianist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just unbelievable layers of just. I mean, you talk about somebody who could give you wise counsel. Look at the administration she's worked for, the things that she's battled through, and all that. And then you get a female, and you get an African-American. But
and she can golf. So
she can golf?
She's a member of the Masters. She's one of the first women members of the Masters course down in Augusta. And
wow.
She's on the College Football Playoff Committee, which decides what four teams get into that playoff at the end of the year. So she's very well-respected in all circles.
Lots of different circles.
Yeah.
Which means that there's a strong probability she would not associate herself
with Trump. No, she would not
associate Trump.
It would be ruinous for her career.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
That is funny. All right, listener, what do you think? Who are you going to vote for? Send me an email, pastor@bbc@gmail.com. So it's PASTOR, Alpha Tango, BBC@gmail.com. Who are you going to vote for? Talk to you later. Thanks for listening.